seated. Every summer for years, probably 8 or 9 summers since I left seminary, I've gone to this summer program at my seminary for my continuing education classes. And I would always manage to take a class with my friend David, who was my preaching professor and a professor of New Testament when I was at seminary. And I went back every year because David and Bob, my two professors, were fantastic teachers and wonderful people, and just the class felt like a gathering of friends gathered with a Bible open and just a desire to preach the Word of God. And I went to his memorial service a couple of weeks ago. He wasn't very old. He was only 76. I had the class with him in June, as I have for, I said, like the last decade. But he had a stroke a couple of months ago, and his health declined rapidly afterwards until he passed away early last month. The memorial service was at my old seminary, Yale Divinity School. And at the reception afterwards, I was talking to one of my other professors who mentioned that he had seen another classmate of mine on campus. And I was excited because this woman, about 12 years ago, led a clergy retreat down in Virginia where she had told us a story. And it was a remarkable story. But you ever had that experience of hearing a story and then forgetting key details of it so that later on when you're trying to tell it, like you can't remember the stuff you need to tell it, but you know it was a darn good one? Well, this is one of those. I could not remember the name of the person that she had told the story about, and it was important. So in any case, I tried to ask around among other classmates to see if they knew. No luck. Called around to see if anybody knew where this woman was, and they, again, had no luck. Tried to find her online, couldn't find her online. But what I didn't realize when I went to David's memorial service, my old professor's memorial service, that it was also the same day as my 20-year seminary class reunion. So when I walked over to where I had heard this woman would be, the place was packed with clergy and all these other old Divinity School alums. So I found her, along with 8 or 9 of my other classmates, at a table in a meeting hall listening to a speaker. And I kept trying to get her attention, and the woman next to me, who I don't remember from school, but we were in the same class together, kept shushing me. So I had to wait. And after the speech was over, I caught up with her, and I got to ask her what the guy's name is, the one from the story that she told us 12 years ago. Martin Rinkert. So remember this in case I forget again. Martin Rinkert. And this is the story that she told all of us priests down in Virginia 12 years ago. And I think you'll know why she told this story in a few minutes. So Rinkert was a German pastor in the 1600s, the son of a coppersmith. He served in a city called Eilenburg, which was also his hometown. Right around the time that he started serving there, at the age of 31, the war that historians call the 30 Years' War broke out. And it was a vicious, bloody war, one of the most destructive in human history. Parts of Europe, particularly in what's now Germany, saw 30 to 50% of the entire population die, either at the hands of various armies or as a result of disease and famine. Because the war was so constant, there really wasn't a time that they could grow food safely. It was a decades-long nightmare. And Eilenburg, where Rinkert lived with his wife and children, was overrun by armies 3 separate times. Rinkert gave all but the barest minimum of his food and money, what little he had, to those around him, just keeping enough back to keep his own family alive, to townspeople, to refugees from the surrounding areas. And then, on top of all this, about 15 years into the war, the plague hit the town in 1637, actually a little bit more than 15 years. But every pastor in town, except him, died. And at the height of the plague, he was conducting 50 funerals daily, a total of 4,000 in all during that outbreak of the plague over that year, including his wife. But he never lost his faith. And he wrote a hymn for his children, for his flock, that we still sing. Do you know what hymn that was? Now Thank We All Our God. Now Thank We All Our God. You know, it's one thing to read the Bible when everything's going pretty well. We hear, see what love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. Yeah, whatever. We're God's children. Whatever that means. But Rinkert, when everyone around him was being killed by soldiers or falling dead from the plague or starving, still prayed to God all the time, still sang songs of praise. Now thank we all our God with heart and hands and voices, who wondrous things hath done, in whom his world rejoices, who from our mother's arms hath blessed us on our way with countless gifts of love, and still is ours today. He wrote that in the midst and after all this stuff. I have a good life. I have a wife I love and children I adore too. I have a church full of people I care about. I have friends I value of all different ages, colors, and beliefs, and I have faith. I believe that God loves me deeply, loves me so much that he calls me his own child. I believe that about all of us, that we are all God's children. God thinks of all humanity as his children, even as wayward as some of us get. And I'm not talking about run-of-the-mill sinning here. I'm talking about the kind of sin and death and just twistedness that Rinkert saw and lived through for decades. I'm talking about people so twisted up inside that they embrace the aims of the nation's enemies, their own nation's enemies, as some of our own leaders have done. They don't love their enemies, as the saints are called to do, as we're called to do. They despise their enemies, but they hate their political rivals more. And what we do about this twisted world we live in, what are we supposed to do with it? Where our blessings exist side by side with sin and death. I guess we keep living as God's children. Well, may this bounteous God through all our life be near us, with ever joyful hearts and blessed peace to cheer us and keep us in his grace and guide us when perplexed and free us from all ills in this world and the next. How did Rinkert do it? How did he do it? Joyful hearts, blessed peace, grace, guidance, freedom from all ills. Could that even have been possible for him? It must have been. He wrote it down and sang it. He prayed and thanked God even after having buried thousands, including his wife and the other pastors in his town. John wrote, "Beloved, we are God's children now. What we will be has not yet been revealed." We have the promise of a renewed, abundant life after this one is over. And yet, we're also promised abundance in this life. Not necessarily in the ways we might hope, but bountiful nonetheless. But given the kinds of things that we undergo, it takes great courage to see it. It takes great imagination to see it. It takes more than both of those things. It takes faith. Faith is something that has those things as part of it and goes beyond them. And some of our neighbors have given up on striving in faith. They've given up on the church here on earth, but also the hope that we have of heaven, of the church beyond this church. We call the church and those who have gone before us into the next world, the communion of saints. In the revelation of John that Mayor read from, when we hear about all those people gathered around the throne in heaven, those are the saints, the people who we say have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That means they've been through this stuff. They've been through the kind of stuff that you've been through, and Rinkert has been through, and I've been through. And somehow, in the midst of that, they've held on to their faith. It's a funny thing to be called a saint, given that we're all aware of our own and others' imperfections. But that is who we are, the saints. David, my professor, was a gentleman, a kind man, wise, learned, funny, and deeply faithful. And as far as I am concerned, he was taken out of this world too soon. But in the chapel that day, gathered in their hundreds to celebrate his ascent to glory, were hundreds of his colleagues and his students and his family. And there were hundreds more who weren't able to be there, who wrote or called or emailed, who had been likewise gathered in spirit for him. And it sounds bleak to us to imagine perhaps a life like Martin Rinkert's, or the death that is at the end of every life. But Rinkert considered himself blessed to be able to serve his neighbors, to raise his children, and love his Lord, even in the times that he lived in, for as long as he had, whatever was going on. He was thankful. And we still sing his song today, even if it's with only a fraction of the courage and conviction that he had. John wrote, "What we do know is this, when Jesus is revealed, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is. And all who have this hope in him purify themselves just as he is pure." We print out this list every year of those who have died, who we're remembering. And there's something somber about it, to be a part of compiling it, because even to the faithful, death seems frightening and final. I imagine you get the experience of that when you look at it, when you think of all the sorrow as well as all the joy that those names represent. And I keep remembering, whenever we compile it, all the people on the list whose names I know. And now and again, I think about the fact that one day I'll be on the list. Maybe this one, maybe another one. And on some level, in the faintness of my faith, that makes me sad. But then I remember David, my teacher, and Martin, whose song we still sing. And I think about all the people I've known for as long as I've been in church, all the people I've known who have affected me for good, all the saints. Because that is what the faithful children of God are. And I think about all the lives that they've touched and still touch. I am who I am because we are who we are. And you are who you are because we are who we are. Children of God. And I want you to know that because you are children of God, your life, your choices, the way that you are in the world, in this world and the next, has meaning and consequence. The gifts that God has given us are not money or power or fame or belongings. That's a lie that the devil has put out into the world that unfortunately far too many of us have believed. The gifts that God has given us are the people who surround us on earth and in heaven, the ones who affected us, the ones who sing God's praises, the ones who have blessed us in a myriad of ways. And it is fitting that we gather today and every Sunday with all of these other gifts to give thanks to God and to give ourselves to the world. All praise and thanks to God the Father now be given the Son and him who reigns with them in highest heaven, eternal triune God, whom earth and heaven adore, for thus it was, is now, and shall be evermore.